Hi, welcome to the Whistleblower Newsroom. I'm here. I'm Christina Borgeson here with my co-host Celia Farber. It gives me no pleasure to do today's show, but someone has to spank CBS's 60 Minutes for their recent segment titled How the Russians Hacked the 2016 Election. Our guests, former NSA Technical Director Bill Binney and veteran CIA analyst Ray McGovern, both of the organization called Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, will be delivering this spanking because after examining critical forensic evidence and based on their firsthand experience and assessments of relevant documents, they are in a position to explain just how and where 60 Minutes has misinformed and disinformed the public in this piece. But before we talk to Ray and Bill, I do want to mention that there is one firsthand source who could and has directly confirmed that the Russians did not hack the DNC server. The one source that the government, 60 Minutes, and every one of the American intelligence agencies who decided that the DNC server had been hacked, this is the one source that they all seem to have studiously avoided. And that source would be Julian Assange, who is, according to some reports, slowly dying in prison in England. So that said, because it had to be said, I think, before we start this show.
Yeah, and there are a number of doctors, I don't know the exact number, who have signed a petition saying his life is in grave danger and he should be immediately taken to a hospital and first save his life and then deal with everything else later.
Yeah, that's this is very, very disturbing. But now to the spanking. Let's bring on today's guests. Welcome, Ray. And I think Bill will be on in a bit, but let's welcome Ray McGovern.
Welcome, Ray.
Thank you.
Oh, welcome, Ray and Bill. We're all together.
Bill here, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Okay. So first, Ray had sent me a quick email right before the show and said he wanted to talk a little bit about Bill because he thinks it's important for people to really understand the knowledge and experience base underpinning some of the things that Bill is going to say about the forensic evidence. Ray?
Well, yes, Christina. Yeah, I would say this, that if I have anything to criticize Bill for, it's that he is allergic to tooting his own horn, okay?
We're not.
He's been right about many things. He enjoys universal respect, even among his former colleagues in NSA, who have every reason to contend with the truth that he espouses. Let me just add this, that it's not difficult to understand how Bill has pieced things together, relying on elementary principles of physics and forensics, which he is an expert in. It's not hard. Now, it's only hard because people have an instinctual aversion to learning anything that they interpret as maybe helping this clown we have in the White House, Trump. But, you know, facts are facts. Truth are truth. Truth is truth. And if people want to impeach Trump, I mean, they have X number of things to impeach him for, and this Russian collusion thing is a hoax, is a myth, and Bill can prove it. Last thing I'll say is this, that Bill has taken me through this innumerable times. The third time, I took out a pad and a pencil, and I copied it down so I wouldn't have to ask him stupid questions for the rest of the next time. Now, for you listeners who want to really learn what's going on here and can surmount this this aversion to learning anything that would help Trump, take out a pencil now, please, or a typewriter. A computer, and make some notes here because it's really simple, but you have to listen carefully. It took me three times. It might take you only once. Sorry to be so long-winded, Christina, But I wanted to have that as a preface because Bill wouldn't say that by himself.
Okay, so let's do this. Let's play the opening of the 60 Minutes show, and then I would like Bill and you, Ray, if you have a comment, to comment on it. Jess, will you play clip one, please?
There was a lot of testimony during this past week's impeachment inquiry about foreign interference in our 2016 election, including the president's assertion that Ukraine was involved. But the president's own intelligence agencies say it was the Russians who hacked the 2016 elections. Special counsel Robert Mueller spelled it out in his report. Now the Justice Department has at least two open cases against Russian citizens for interfering with our presidential and congressional races. We decided to take a closer look at one of them, the case against 12 Russian military officers accused of breaking into the Democratic Party's computers, stealing compromising information, and selectively releasing it to undermine Democratic candidates. There's no evidence of similar operations against Republicans in 2016. With the 2020 election approaching, the story of the Russian hack.
The Russians never left. I can guarantee you in 2016, after this all hit the news, they never left. They didn't stop doing what they're doing.
This wasn't just a one-time thing.
No way. Russia doesn't do it that way.
Robert Anderson should know. He spent 21 years inside the cloak and dagger world of spies and hackers, overseeing the FBI's counterintelligence and cyber divisions, and tracking Moscow spy agencies, an alphabet of artifice, the FSB, SVR, and especially the GRU.
The GRU is military intelligence. So when we look at the attacks that happened during our presidential races in 2016, you had military organizations inside of Russia attacking our infrastructure.
So, Bill, I hear your
Who's dog.
Bill's
yeah,
dog.
Yeah, he's going bananas downstairs. I'm sorry about
What's
that.
What's his name?
You know.
That's okay. I think it's because he just heard what he heard. Go ahead, yeah. Bill. Let's hear your comments on the
That's
opening.
Probably it. Yeah, but I mean, you know, when I looked around, I kept looking for forensic evidence that somebody had, that the Russians had hacked, and I couldn't find anything. And you know, to me was that they were charging spies for being spies, and the evidence they presented in the Mueller report. People assumed it came from NSA or a governmental sources. Well, I'm here to tell you that's false. That did not come from the government, because if it was copied by anybody in the government, NSA, FBI, CIA, or any of them, it's classified. You can't put that in an open statement that's released to the public like Mueller did, because it would have to be redacted because it's classified material. Otherwise, Mueller's guilty of exposing classified falls under the Code 18 laws against for protection of classified material. That data came from a third party. My guess most likely would be CrowdStrike. But that data, the FBI, there's no control of that evidence. There's no basic information. They didn't have the server in the first place. So the evidence needs to be questioned is, where is the source of this data that you're alleging?
Well, now, they're saying that Robert Anderson
look at things in a forensic way. But if you took just the indictment and all from Mueller, I mean, and case in point is they allege the IRA, the Internet Research Petersburg in Russia, was working for the. Now, that company sent lawyers into the court to challenge that statement, saying we're not part of that. And the court said, now you've got to prove it. And they failed miserably. So, they indicted somebody because it made a good story. What's happening here is these people are piecing together this story, unsubstantiated by anything real, because they, when they get challenged, they fail. So, and that's why, that's one of the reasons they wouldn't let me testify in the Roger Stone case, because it would take away their argument about the Russian hack, because I had forensic proof that it wasn't a hack, and they didn't want to hear it, and the judge wouldn't allow it in. So, I mean, it's like a, you know, first wants to hear it. Nobody in the media wants to hear it because it's evidence contrary to this general emotional belief. It has nothing to do with fact. There's no factual evidence here at all.
This is more frightening than even the situation at hand that the media can now create. It's like post-reality,
right.
Constructed realities that we're all forced to live in, and there's just not a thing we can do about it. A fact is no longer a fact. That is a bigger problem that's going to be with us after this thing comes and goes.
Yeah, that's exactly true. Basically, what they do is they cannot distinguish between an emotional thought and fact.
That's right.
So based on what you just said, I want to play the second clip, which is all about GRU, the Russians agency, spy agency, that they said specifically was responsible for the hack. Jess, will you play clip two, please?
These are the hacker soldiers from GRU Unit 26165, who, according to the Justice Department, were responsible for breaking and entering into the Democratic Party's computers remotely from Moscow. Their names, ranks, and faces are now on the FBI's most wanted list for stealing, among other things, the Democrats' strategic plans, detailed targeting data, and internal polling. GRU Colonel Alexander Osadchuk commanded a separate unit, 74455. One of his officers was in charge of spreading the stolen material to political operatives, bloggers, and the media. Another hacked state election boards.
It wasn't some 400-pound guy in his parents' basement.
No, this was a well-choreographed military operation with units that not only were set up specifically to hack into, obtain information, but other units that were used for psychological warfare or weaponizing that. This is not an operation that was just put together haphazardly.
Bill, what do you think? I mean, there's a lot of detail here.
Yeah, but again, it's a construction. I mean, it sounds like a good story, but they need to put NSA trace routes of all these packets that are sent around by these people, they allege that are sent between these people. They don't produce that evidence at all, and they don't make any reference to it either. Now, NSA has about a hacks on the fiber network inside the United States, so any data going in or out of the United States on fiber or satellite or any kind of cable is acquired by NSA.
Is acquired by NSA.
You know where it's in the network, world network, and where it went. So it's not a problem for them to be able to do that. And I don't see any of that evidence introduced in work. Any of that paper fabrication, let's put it that way. I just don't trust these people to do anything. Once you show a fabrication in their Mueller report, the whole thing is in question. Now you have to validate and nobody has done that.
So, I mean, the FBI's most wanted cyber criminals are these GRU guys, Boris Antonov, Dmitry Badin, Sergei Morgachev. There are, how many of them?
I would say that's absolutely wrong. The most dangerous ones are Chinese, not Russian. The Chinese are much better at this than the Russians, and they've been doing it since the 90s.
Yeah, but we're talking about, these are the guys that they say hacked the DNC servers. So my question to you is, I mean, they put out their pictures, they have warrants for them or whatever, but go ahead.
Now let's boil this down to make it a real simple thought. They're alleging that this then was passed to WikiLeaks to be posted and distributed. Now, that means you look at the WikiLeaks data posted from the DNC, all that material from the 23rd, 25th of May, and also the 26th of August. That's what WikiLeaks posted from the DNC. All of that data shows evidence, FAT file format evidence, that says it was read to a thumb drive or a CD-ROM before and physically transported before WikiLeaks posted it. Now, that's not a hack. That's a provable thing in court, and that's why I sent in my affidavit for Roger Stone, and that's what they won't allow in the courtroom. No one will publish it in the mainstream media.
So
because it simply says this total assertion of a hack is just absolutely false.
So are you saying that this 60 Minutes piece is in its entirety is a disinformation or misinformation piece?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's totally wrong. Yep.
Well,
I would just add here, if I may, that when William Casey came in as the CIA director under Ronald Reagan, at the first cabinet meeting, when each cabinet member had a chance to talk about their objectives, Bill Casey said, and we know this because a friend of mine was there and reported it contemporaneously, he said this, quote, "We'll know that our disinformation program is successful when Americans believe what Americans believe is totally false," period, end quote. Well, you know, Casey, wherever he's perched now, hopefully he's in heaven, but maybe elsewhere, he must be really smiling down. He said, wow, you know, it was complete then. Now, even CNN, everybody is singing the same tune, and it's all disinformation. We have succeeded beyond our wildest expectations.
Okay, so this whole piece, part of the show, a part of the piece on GRE was presented by Robert Anderson. Okay, who was spent, you know, they say he spent 21 years as the FBI's counterintelligence and cyber.
Christina,
yes.
Yeah, I asked Colleen Rowley, who was there a long time. I said, "What about Bob Anderson?" She said, "Who?" I said, "Robert Anderson."
Wow.
Robert Anderson. I never heard of him. Okay. So, well, you know, these people come up and they'll be used, or they'll be used, and, you know, they get a little notoriety. And who is Robert Anderson? Does he know anything close to what Bill Binney knows about
cyber? I'm just saying that the whole business about GRE was presented. Robert Anderson is presented as someone who spent 21 years overseeing the FBI's counterintelligence and cyber divisions and tracking Moscow's spy agencies. He's the one who's giving this narrative
who was trotted out yeah. in a nice suit,
yes,
walking
yes.
on that street, you know, that's all they have to do,
yes,
the street, the guy, the suit, Robert Anderson, no one's heard of him, it's a spell.
So the FBI, they've brought out the FBI guy to give you the GRU narrative. Now let's move to the Department of Justice, which brings the case, which is supposed to make the case based on the FBI's information. Jess, will you play clip 3, please?
National Security Division is overseeing the Russian hacking case.
Once they're doing that keystroke monitoring.
Assistant Attorney General John Demers runs the division, along with deputies Adam Hickey and Sean Newell. DOJ Attorney Heather Alpino worked with Special Counsel Mueller on the Russian indictments. All have access to the underlying intelligence and have no doubt the Russians interfered in the 2016 election.
This really happened?
Yes, that really happened. And we believe that if we had to, we could prove that in court tomorrow using only admissible non-classified evidence to 12 jurors.
Do you ever expect to get the 12 Russian officials to trial?
I would be surprised, but the purpose of the indictment isn't just that, although that's certainly one of the purposes. The purposes of this kind of indictment is even to educate the public.
For a legal document, the 29-page indictment is a page-turner. It details how U.S. intelligence agencies tracked each defendant's actions, sometimes by the keystroke, revealing the fictitious names and phony emails used to infiltrate the Democrats' computers, and tracing the stolen data on its circuitous route from Washington, D.C. to Moscow.
The information in the indictment is very detailed.
Mm-hmm.
You have descriptions of the Russian agents typing mm-hmm. into their computers.
Obviously, I can't go into too much detail because I don't want to reveal investigative methods. But the insight here is that behind every one of those keyboards is not an IP address, it's a human being.
Those indicted GRU agents.
So, Bill, what do you think of that segment, that part of it?
Well, I have no doubt that they're concocting this story. How about that? So, I mean, to me, the basic issue is still simple. They're trying to allege that the Russians were involved in transferring data to WikiLeaks. Now, the problem is the WikiLeaks posted data, DNC data that they had, shows that it was downloaded to a physical device and then transferred physically. They have to deal with that, and they're not. They don't want to look at that because it takes away this idea that they hacked and drained their data across and then passed it to WikiLeaks. None of which, no data of which, they have no trace route program output that shows any of that transfer. That's the problem. That's what they need to be dealing with, and that's not what they're doing. They're making up this story. I'm sure that the Russians are looking around our network, looking into all kinds of things, but did they do the transfer of data to WikiLeaks? No. That did not happen by a hack. That didn't happen by the Russians. Somebody did it locally in the DNC area.
Well, and the interesting thing about that is that Assange himself has said no state actor. He did not get the DNC leak server stuff from any state actor, and particularly he did not get it from the Russians.
And he's not the only one. Craig Murray, the British ambassador to Uzbekistan, I think it was, he met somebody on the American university campus who was involved in that data transfer, and he told us that. So, and also Kim.com said,
what do you mean he met someone who was involved in the data transfer? Wait. What do you mean he met someone who was involved in the data transfer?
Yeah, that's what Craig Murray said. He said he had met somebody. I think Ray was at a meeting with him down in D.C. in the American University campus. And then after that meeting, he met somebody and talked to somebody who was involved in that data transfer physically.
Could you tell our audience who Craig Murray is, please?
He's the former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, I believe it was. You can look it up on the web. Just Google his name, ambassador.
He's on Twitter.
Craig Murray.
Well, I also find it interesting that in a unfortunately surreptitiously recorded telephone conversation Ed Batowski had with Seymour Hersh, Seymour Hersh told him that he had a source, a highly placed source, who asked
in the FBI.
A source inside the FBI to look at Seth Rich's file, and the FBI, he said that the Size source told him that the FBI guy who looked at Seth Rich's file said, yeah, he was involved in this thing.
Well, Seth Rich's parents
also admitted it
said
to Batowski.
Our sons, plural, were involved with this, and we know that, said that to Ed Batowski, said that to us on this show. That's as far as we can take it.
So the assistant attorney general has not spoken to Julian Assange. Now he's talking about the agencies tracking the defendant's actions, meaning the GRU hackers, by keystroke. So he's making all this up? Bill?
Well, I mean, the story about the Russian involvement, yeah, it's all being made up.
Wow. I mean, have you looked at the 29-page indictment?
Yeah, but I only looked at the forensic part, the section that that said things about the forensics of it, and there was nothing there. I mean, I couldn't see anything that connected them. I mean, after all, if the intelligence community assessment, which was really NSA, CIA, and FBI, and selected analysts from those groups doing it, even in there, they said when they had high confidence, right? But the people who had high confidence were FBI and CIA. NSA only had moderate confidence. What that tells you, very simply put, and NSA is the one that captures all this electronic data. They're the ones who are chartered by the government to do this. If they have moderate confidence, it means they have no evidence. That means there's no substance behind it. Now, how can you hack from Russia and not have NSA know it? I mean, they monitor all the exiting pipes from the fiber lines or the cables or the satellites. So, you know, there's no way they could miss this.
And aren't they in this very show talking about keystrokes? Keystrokes. If they have all these keystrokes, why don't they at that same moment have what they need? Why is it all after the horse is out of the barn? Does anybody understand what I mean? They're talking about these keystrokes, right? So if they had the keystrokes, they had them when they were happening.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to say they can get into your computer and watch what you're doing, which is fine. You know, they could do that, sure.
So then why wouldn't they have thwarted an ostensible attack on the
right.
DNC
It's just, an added thing that they wanted to throw in to try to bamboozle people.
So
the fundamental question is, how did the data get to WikiLeaks? And it didn't go electronically. It went physically. That's my point.
So
Bill,
go ahead.
Maybe I could interject here. You know, we have all kinds of people they should have touched base with, Craig Murray and Julian himself. But there's another fellow. His name is Obama. 2 days before he left office, he said gratuitously at a press conference, the conclusions of the intelligence community with respect to how WikiLeaks got this, quote, Russian hack are inconclusive, period, end quote. So we have inconclusive conclusions as tested to by a fellow who's going to go out of office and 2 days later, a fellow who had been briefed on the 5th of January, 2017 in great detail about all this business about the Russian hacking. So Obama himself had felt it necessary for some lawyerly reason that escapes me to disengage himself, to dissociate himself with the claim that the U.S. intelligence community can prove that there was a Russian hack that was transmitted to WikiLeaks. So, I mean, there's a pretty good source for you, right?
Right.
Now, as far as the intelligence community assessment is concerned, they needed that. Now, everyone refers to that. Now, here it is, the president's own intelligence agencies. They were corrupt. They were not doing their job. The people who did that assessment were John Brennan and James Clapper. And when they talk about hand-picked analysts, well, the way I reconstruct it, Clapper picked Brennan, and Brennan picked Clapper, and those were that's why that assessment is so full of holes.
I'll tell you, what's interesting to me is this exchange where Assistant Attorney General John Demers says, and we believe, okay, not we know, we believe that if we had to, we could prove in court tomorrow using only admissible non-classified evidence to 12 juries that this really happened. And then he said, but the purpose of the indictment isn't just to bring the officials to trial because they know that'll never happen. The purpose of this kind of indictment is even to educate the public.
There you go.
I think it's Bill, could you comment on that?
Well, I mean, to me, he's trying to fundamentally bamboozle, misinform, disinform the public. They can't be honest. I mean, otherwise they would have allowed my testimony in the Roger Stone case, but then it would have been a public record in a federal court. You know, that's a problem for them. They don't that's too much of a exposure too much sunlight on the problem. You know, as long as there's something that you want to allege or assert to the public and get that across in the minds of the public, you need to keep any exculpatory evidence or anything that doesn't conform to that agenda. You have to keep that out of the sight of the people. Well, I mean, that's what they've been doing with our lawsuit in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals about, you know, them spying on everybody in the country illegally, violating the 1st, 4th, 5th, 6th Amendments of the Constitution, the Penn Register Law, the Electronic Privacy Act, Electronic Security Act, all the FCC regulations governing telecommunications companies, all of that. And they've been trying to slow roll that and keep it out of the public view and certainly try to keep it out of the court, the federal, you know, the Supreme Court. And that's another case. If you looked at Amnesty International versus Clapper that did make it to the Supreme Court, in that case, they were alleging the same thing, that people were being convicted criminally using NSA data that wasn't admissible in a court of law, and then doing a construction called parallel construction. They made up the evidence, basically, and substituted that for the NSA data in the court of law. That's perjury and all kinds of, you know, violations of criminal acts, basically, by the government. And the Solicitor General lied to the Supreme Court to get that case thrown out. He said if anybody had that data used against them, they would be told. That was a lie. Nobody's ever been told.
Wow.
So they'll even lie to the Supreme Court. So we have to really challenge these people. You can't just accept what they say because they're really pushing a line of crap at us.
So simply put, in the Obama era, we're turned into a massive surveillance state, a tyrannical surveillance state, followed immediately by a crisis during which we deflect this surveillance paranoia onto Russia. Now, here's my question. Why Russia? Ray, you're a Russia expert. Why does it even make sense that Russia would go to these lengths to ensure that Donald Trump won the election, Hillary lost? Why does that make sense in terms of even just address the fairy tale? What do they want us to think?
Well, it doesn't make sense, and that's the bottom line here. They needed a reason to explain why Hillary Clinton lost an election that it was hers to lose, that she couldn't possibly lose.
People lose elections. Why not just she lost? Let's move on. It's what happened. She lost.
They were involved in trying to sabotage Trump, and they were deathly afraid that since they were so convinced that Hillary Clinton would win, they didn't even disguise their paper trails. They didn't exercise rudimentary tradecraft. And so everything they did to try to sabotage Trump was in the records. And this is a large measure of why they went so big on this Russia thing, because they had to have some sort of extra explanation as to why Hillary lost. And so the Russians were elected. And besides that, of course, the deep state does not want better relations with Russia. That's a big thing, okay? The military industrial intelligence congressional think tank media complex will run out of money if Russia and we have a better relationship. So there was a nexus of reasons here. But, you know, the bottom line here is that this guy Demers from the FBI, you know, he's being very disingenuous.
No, he's the assistant attorney general.
Discovery, okay? If they could be discovered, as the judge in the IRA case said, look, you say Russia did this, but you have no proof. Throw this thing out of court. Now, the same thing happened with the GRU. Mueller was at work for about a year and a half. He had no indictments. He needed some indictments, right? Everybody he indicted had nothing to do with Russiagate. They pick people who can't possibly come to the United States. They name these GRU types, and they're in business because now they've got something very specific that people like James Risen and other people who have kind of turned the corner on all this can advertise as indisputable proof. And, you know, in bottom analysis, they have no indisputable proof. And the CrowdStrike business, that also came up in court, and CrowdStrike was revealed to have not given, now get this, they never gave the FBI a final report on their so-called forensics. They didn't do forensics. Bill did. Bill and his co-worker, who was also a technical director at NSA, did the forensics. We can prove that everything that this 60-minute thing alleges is false on its face, but we can't get any exposure in the media. We're hoping that programs like this will remedy that.
Well, let's keep going with this.
Here? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I had three reasons why. This was the third. The first one. These are all swindles. They're swindling us, thinking us, we the public are, we'll never notice what they're doing, so we won't recognize it. The first swindle was you had to give up privacy for security. That was false from the beginning, and they knew it. Okay, you didn't have to do that. I mean, if they used a disciplined professional approach like we did on the Thin Thread program inside NSA, that's why they got rid of it, because it can only cost us a little over $3 million to do it, and they needed to get a startup program 1,000 times more. $3.8 billion was the first request for the Trailblazer program, and that failed miserably. But the point was that was the first swindle. You did not have to give up privacy for security. But they got that idea in people's mind, and so everybody just accepted it. Then they went to that bulk acquisition of data, and that cost, that's the whole point. That's cost us tens of billions every year. The second swindle was cybersecurity. Look at the Vault 7 material, you know, out of CIA and the NSA data that was compromised earlier. That's hundreds of millions of lines of source code, tens of thousands of attacks on fiber lines, you know, cable switches, servers, operating systems, firewalls, all of that. And they knew about them but didn't tell anybody to fix them. So that meant we were all sitting here fat, dumb, and happy, vulnerable to almost any hacker in the world. So that when we get attacked, they say, oh, here, you see, for cybersecurity, we need more money. That's the second swindle. The third swindle is the Russiagate. If they can create this fear of Russia as an external enemy, then they can create a new Cold War. That's going to be swindling us out of trillions over years and years. This is the whole idea behind this. I call it the happiness management program. That's the one that Ray was talking about, the military, industrial, intelligence, you know.
Media.
All that governmental kind of stuff. That's that happiness management program, and they're swindling us every time they turn around. So the problem they have with Trump is that he's going to expose this because he tells things like it is, and they can't control it.
Yeah. Do you agree with that, Ray? Do you agree with that assessment?
I do, yeah. I would add Bill's last remark there about Trump. Someone gave him at least some sections of our major study on this that we put out at VIPS on the 24th of July, 2017. And the next thing you know, he asked Pompeo, who was head of the CIA at the time, hey, look, if you want to know about Russian hacking, talk to Bill Binning. Now, Pompeo waited 3 months, right? But you did get in to see him. Bill, explain what went on there.
My wife got a call from assistant, Director Pompeo's assistant when he was CIA director. And he said he'd like to talk to me. So eventually, I was overseas, but eventually I got back and then got in to see him. And when I went in, the first thing he said was, the president told me that if I wanted to know facts about Russia, to talk to you. So I was laying out all the facts I knew. And at the same time, he had two other technical people there who were, you know, asked some questions and I answered them. And I said, all this data is on the web and anybody in the world can go look at it and do the same assessments and calculations of the speed and the and look at the evidence of fat file formats and all that stuff. And then I went into basically exposing to the rest of the IC to him, saying that the intelligence community is lying to you and the president. They're not being honest with you. They have this information as well. And in fact, if there was any hack at all, they have the packets. So, you know, and he said he found that hard to believe, but I said, you know, you don't have to believe me. All you have to do is read the DODIG complaint 05-intel-03 issued in January 2005. And you can see all the lies, corruption, fraud, and all that in NSA. And that's simply spread. All these agencies are pretty much the same. So you say, you don't have to believe me. Just go read that report. You can see all the stuff that's going on even back then. And now it's no different. See, these agencies aren't really telling them.
And what happened with the meeting?
This is really bad.
Yeah, when
the president said, go to me for facts, I mean, I'm just one of, you know, like five or six people doing this, you know?
Yeah, but what happened after your meeting with Pompeo?
The ability to get on the computer network.
What happened?
And we're spending over $100 billion for the intelligence community, and they're not telling our leadership these basic facts? This is not really good for us. I mean, this is how you get into wars like slam dunk, weapons of mass destruction, or the Tonkin Gulf affair that didn't even happen. Let's start a war. You know, let's kill lots of people based on falsehoods. This is what this crap is that this government is passing around, a bunch of falsehoods trying to get the public to believe it.
What was your sense, Bill, of how Pompeo was responding to what you were telling him in that meeting? Was he interested? Was he excited to bring it to the president? What was his response?
Well, he asked me if I would talk to NSA and FBI. And I said, sure. But I wouldn't assist them in violating the constitutional rights of U.S. citizens like they're doing now. And he said, well, nobody wants that. Well, I mean, he knows about it anyway. So He's not the only one. The Attorney General knows about it. The President should know about it. I mean, obviously, some things seem to be surprising him, and he was afraid. He's even said at one point, you know, people wouldn't believe the extent of what's going on here. Well, it's everything. You know, that's the whole point.
So what happened? It seems the trail went cold.
He wanted to stand up for his bureaucracy of the CIA at the time, and I can understand that, but you got to face the problem to fix it, and if you don't face the problem, you'll never fix it.
So what happened? You know, what happened? Did you go brief the FBI?
Nothing happened after that.
Did you reach out to him and say, hey, how about those briefings that you asked me to do?
You know, by that time, he moved to State Department.
So, okay.
Why wasn't President Trump interested in you using your extraordinary testimony and expertise to defend himself in this Russiagate investigation? Can anybody address that? That's really mystifying.
Sure. It's because he's not in control.
Yeah.
You know, everybody thinks Trump is running things, but he's not running things. It's the kinds of things we're talking about here. The people in NSA, CIA, and FBI have this record of knowing better than the president, and especially when you get a buffoon as a president, as I think he is, Bill may disagree, you can manipulate him. You can vitiate all his initiatives, and not only that, you can blacken him. So, you know, do they want to get out of Syria? Trump does. But we're in there for the long haul, right? Are they going to release under congressional mandate the rest of the emails and other documents on the JFK assassination? Well, Trump says, yeah, we're going to do that in the morning. And in the afternoon, he says, no, the FBI and the CIA say we can't do that. We'll revisit that. He's not his own man. And he's very, very chary about taking on more than he can bite. And he's got people now like Barr who seem to be serious about holding these people accountable. The smart money says the deep state almost always wins. Maybe this will be an exception, but we'll know that in the next couple of months.
I want to continue with this because after we do this show, I'm going to send it to 60 Minutes. I'm going to send it to the producers of this show and the head of 60 Minutes and to CBS's. So I want to talk about... I want you to address the next clip, which is about Guccifer. So, Jess, will you play clip 4, please?
One team, working out of a building in Moscow called the Tower, created a website and a provocative character to disseminate the stolen material, Guccifer 2.0.
So Guccifer 2.0 is a fictional online persona. It's all an effort on the Russian side to hide their involvement.
And these guys are pretending to be one lone hacker.
Correct.
And that works?
What it gives them is plausible deniability, right? They don't need it to work 100% as long as the Russians can say, wasn't us.
Posing as Guccifer 2.0, the Russians offered up stolen documents to Julian Assange's WikiLeaks and self-proclaimed dirty trickster Roger Stone. It was all part of a broad campaign to disrupt the presidential election. But there was another, less well-known part of the Russian operation, to undermine Democrats running for Congress.
It started as large document dumps, where Guccifer 2.0 was kind of taunting and saying, I have more.
Kelly Ward Burton was executive director of the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, when the Russians hacked the committee's computers.
These bullet points at the top are the summary for how we need to win.
They swiped and dumped on the internet material she told us cost millions of dollars to produce. Battle plans for congressional races, demographic research on voters, and extensive dossiers on the weaknesses of their own candidates.
So, Bill, what do you think of that whole narrative about Guccifer?
I also put this in the affidavit I submitted to the court, the federal court in Roger Stone's case. Again, at Guccifer 2, all the data that he posted, this is the forensics we did was on the data that Guccifer 2 posted and alleged to be a hack of the DNC. Okay?
Right.
This is what he put out for us to look at. So when we looked at it, we calculated the speed of transfer of the data of every file. And you could do that because the files were listed. It was a file name, the number of characters, and a timestamp at the end. Then the next file, name, number of characters, timestamps. So all you had to do is difference of timestamps, and it told you the time it took for them to send the amount of characters between. That was very simple. So we did this for every file. So that then said, gee, the highest speed transfer we had was 49.1 megabytes per second. Well, technically, that's not possible across the web. We had been saying that from the beginning. Some of us said, it could go. So we said, okay, we'll try it. So we tried it, and we could not even from data center to data center, which was the fastest speed we had, I think something like a 1.5 gigabit line. And the fastest we could transfer it was a little over 12 megabytes per second. Now, that's less than 1/4 the necessary capacity to transfer the highest rate that we got from the Guccifer posted material. So, but it's compatible with a download to a thumb drive. So we said this had to be a local download. It couldn't be a hack across the web. So it wasn't a Russian hack. Now, that negated the first allegation of Guccifer 2, that it was a Russian hack. That's false. It was downloaded locally, so it wasn't anything in long distance away from the DNC. So, you know, that tells you right away that the guy is lying to us right up front. Now, there's another point about it. He put out two batches of data, one the 5th of July and one the 1st of September. So if you looked at those two files and simply ignored the day and the hour, the minutes, seconds, and milliseconds, and looked only at those, then those two files merged without conflict. That is, the holes in one file were plugged by the data from the other file. So that simply means, hey, this guy had one file, and he went through and moved data out of one file into another and said he did two hacks when he did one. Well, that tells you right away that this guy is playing with the data, and now he's playing with us. And you know, that means he's a total fabrication, a total fake. And he's not Russian because it's not hackable across to Russia. Sorry. You know, that's the whole point of that. That's what I put in the federal courts in Roger Stone case. And nobody will let me enter that anywhere. The only place it gets is like in shows like this, or people who are willing to at least have some airtime to let this kind of information out to the public for them to know about it. Otherwise, they don't know, you know, and they let these fabrications continue.
Yeah, but Bill, the indictments of those GRU officers, they were all based on Guccifer 2. Now, are you saying that Bob Mueller was himself confused or misled? I mean, the whole thing falls apart if Guccifer 2 turns out to be a fraud. How do you answer that?
I mean, he's a fraud, too. You know, the whole indictment was a fraud.
But what is the
follow-up was also a fraud, you know? It's a fraud on the public.
Well, go ahead.
I want to share some good news I just came upon. There's a clip from this show we're talking about, the 60 Minutes episode, posted November 23rd, 2019. The clip is called DOJ Official on 2016 Russian Election Hack. Quote, they were certainly looking to hurt Hillary Clinton. And I looked at the comments. You'd love this. All of them are calling BS on this hypothesis, this program, this PSYOP, the whole thing. I'm just going to read a couple of them, okay? First comment, stop reliving 2016 and arrest Epstein's clientele. Second comment, his name was Seth Rich. next comment, is this 1950 or what? Next one, there was no hack, fake media. Material was downloaded by a DNC operative, Seth Rich, and it was done to discredit Hillary, but only because Bernie was being pushed out of the race and the hacker was a Bernie fan. How dare they report our crimes to the rest of the world? Yeah, well, maybe don't commit acts you'd be embarrassed about Russian hackers finding in the first place. And the last one I'll read. We, the people, know this is all a lie.
I want to talk about something else. Mueller's other Russians that Mueller has been indicting for being part of this effort to influence our elections. He kind of got caught with his pants down with one group, the Concord Management Company that he alleged, Mueller's group alleged, were involved in financing, I think it was financing troll farms or something. Anyway, they never expected Concord Management, which is run owned by a big Russian oligarch, to actually send a lawyer to the U.S. to defend Concord Management. They were hoping that the same thing that's going on with GRU, in other words, GRU is not going to respond. I think they were hoping that the same thing would happen with these other Russians. Well, a lawyer showed up and was asking for discovery. And so far, the lawyer says that he has made at least 70 requests for discovery that Mueller's people, that the department have not responded to. So
it seems to me they're just digging themselves a very big ditch. And, you know, they're in this ditch. The American people are somewhere else. That's why I read those comments, because I think they're just drifting off into literally a hallucination that they can't get out of. They have made legacy media pounding away at this thing, and nobody else believes it or cares, except that we're angry at this point, and Trump's going to win by a landslide in 2020.
Well, Bill, I want you to know we had Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter James Stewart on here. He wrote the book Deep State, which purported to be looking into the origins of Russiagate. And, you know, he was pointing to George Papadopoulos. And so we asked him if he'd ever spoken to George Papadopoulos, and he said no, he'd never interviewed him. And then we asked him, well, do you know who Bill Binney is? Because he looked at the forensic evidence, attached to the alleged hack. And he said, no, he'd never heard of you. So
then he said
then
he wanted
he
to
us,
get off the show.
Yeah, then he wanted
he
to get
time.
Off.
He said, I have 5 minutes.
This isn't what my book is about. My book is about, he said, you know, looking at what the FBI, you know, looking at what the FBI was doing at the time.
And that's one of those weird phrases. If you want to talk about my book, we can talk.
Yeah, but it was weird because it was like he just wanted to cover what James Comey and his group was doing. He didn't really want to be bothered looking into whether what they said or did was valid or true.
So it's like selective knowing. Everybody gets to choose what they know and what they don't know.
Yeah. So, Bill, you're not famous enough.
But again, you know, it's the idea of keeping the narrative out of the public view so that they don't hear it and they don't have a chance to take it in and consider it. So, I mean, if you only hear one side, that's the only side you hear. That's what these people are doing. It's repetition through the media, controlling the narrative that goes to the public. That's what they're trying to do. That's what Casey was all about back in 82, I think it was.
But I still
And so that simply meant that as long as you can control the narrative, that's the only thing that people know. And so, therefore, that's what they believe. And, you know, that's simply, and that's not necessarily true either, I would say, but, you know, I mean, thinking people would not simply just accept things. That's the point. You can't do that because they'll simply manipulate you anyway. That's what they're doing. They're manipulating us. So, and that's what Mueller was doing. And Rosenstein, that's what they were doing with those indictments and the report from Mueller, just basically indictments on.
Well, I mean, apparently his name is Eric DeBellier. He's the lawyer for Concord Management. He was pointing out that there were other companies mentioned in the Mueller report, Russian companies allegedly involved, and some of those companies didn't even exist. So, you know, if any good and conscionable investigative reporter wants a great assignment, why don't you go look at Mueller's report talking about all these Russians who did all these things and actually follow up on whether or not what Mueller has reported in his report is true.
Easy answer to that, Christina, because you could never get it published.
Exactly. Okay? Ray, what's your term for the mass media?
this is not a laughing matter here. They're
You're
calling
right.
Bill Binney a conspiracy theorist, okay? And they're controlling the narrative. So, you know, what most people believe, and it's kind of an emotional thing, they don't want to believe anything that could in any way help Trump. What most people believe is what the major media tell them. And we're coming to a denouement now because the people who have been feeding the major media, that is Clapper and Brennan and Comey, yep. are about to be indicted, okay? Now, if they get indicted, that the balloon is up. This country is already divided, but the two sides will find it really, really hard. And what I'm saying is the next couple of months will show whether the deep state runs this country or whether the duly elected constitutional president, however much you want to despise him, still is in power. That's big.
That yeah. is. That's huge.
I don't think that people, you referred to people, Ray, I think that they're losing people. They're losing, we refer to the American, that's why I read these comments. These are the top comments on 60 Minutes' own website. So this ought to be 60 Minutes devotees, right? So I disagree that people are buying this. I think they've lost everything but each other.
Well,
let's hope that's true.
I mean, I think...
meaning deep state and media have each other. And they have maybe a certain captive audience of totally spellbound people who hate Trump so much they still believe this. But it's...
Let's see if...
Yeah,
let's
go ahead.
See if Tucker Carlson still lives. He's beginning to shed some light on some of these things. And whether he keeps his position at Fox or not will be a bellwether as to whether...
Uh-oh.
Ray, you have such a wonderful acronym for for the media industrial complex. Could you just share that with us in the last 2 minutes?
We're talking about this night. The Mickey Mat. It's the military industrial congressional intelligence media academe think tank complex.
By the way,
Mickey Mat.
Mickey Matt.
Before we go, I want to say you were talking about people calling, accusing Bill of being a conspiracy theorist. But I'm going to tell you something. That is not going to stick. And the reason why it's not going to stick is because of his resume. It's just not. You can't have someone who was, technical director of the NSA, you know, who's talking about the technical aspects of the forensic evidence. You can't call him a conspiracy theorist and make it stick.
They're in
can't.
The business of relegating people. That's
well,
what they do.
Well, I know, but it's not going to, it cannot stick with Bill. And I know that.
That's what I'm,
I know
I'm
that.
Saying. It's not sticking already. Go read the
right,
comments
right.
at 60 Minutes.
Well, we're going to be sending this to 60 Minutes. We'll let you know what happens.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. Go forth and have no fear.